Welcome to Well Told Tales, the Pulp Fiction Podcast. Before we get into our story, I've got a couple of announcements. First, the exciting stuff. We're neck deep in development and about to kick off pre-production for our first feature film. Now, don't expect a studio picture. We're shooting digitally on a shoestring. But we think we have a pretty cool story that we can pull off with our small budget and talented volunteers. For now, we're calling the movie The House. We've got another name that we'll probably use down the road, but don't want to give anything away too early. The bad news is that making a movie is very time-consuming. So we're going to trim our publishing schedule to one audio story per month, down from the two per month we've been doing lately. Longtime listeners may remember last year, when we shot our short film, we put the podcast on hiatus for a couple of months. We didn't want to do that again, so we thought cutting back was a pretty good compromise. Hopefully after you see the flick, you'll agree that it was. Also, to make up for our leaner publishing schedule, we're going to be introducing some new features to the WellToldTales.com website. More on those as we get closer to rolling them out. One thing for certain, we'll be blogging and video podcasting about the making of this film, so you get a peek behind the scenes as we're going along. We'll have much more info on the site in the coming weeks, and if you're interested in getting involved in the movie, feel free to reach out to us via the contact page on WellToldTales.com. We can always use a hand. But enough about our movie and publishing schedule and all this and that. Let's get down to the story.
Final Notice. Written by Theodore Carter. Read by Elise Krawick. Ginny looked carefully at Leopold's abnormally large paws as he slept, perched atop the back of the couch. Now, nearly 6 months old, Leopold should have been taking on the proportions of an adult cat. But as his legs grew longer, they grew thicker. His nose protruded too much, and his ears were too wide. Still, according to her book, some kittens took longer to grow into their bodies, and looking at him, his narrowed eyes, his belly moving in and out with each breath, she felt guilty for questioning his appearance. She got up and stroked his back before walking toward the kitchen. Leopold opened his eyes, turned to look at her, and returned to his previous position. She sat at the kitchen table with a cup of tea and looked at the stack of envelopes in front of her. Bills, mostly. She hated seeing them there each day, but she couldn't bring herself to do anything about them either. Stan had taken care of the bills before. It wasn't that she couldn't figure out the finances herself. Every so often, she paid bills, though not monthly. In her mind, it was still Stan's job, and she resented the monthly reminders of Stan's passing. She sifted through the stack of envelopes and read the return addresses. The sound of Leopold's rhythmic, guttural snores came in from the living room. She'd never imagined such sounds could be so comforting. "Get a pet," her friend Annie had said, and she'd scoffed. Like getting a stupid animal could replace Stan. Eventually, Ginny followed Annie's advice. While most of her widowed friends had children about, were it not for Leopold, Ginny would be utterly alone. He did make things easier. Reflecting on this helped Ginny get out her checkbook, stamps, and a pen. 2 months later, she'd accumulated a new pile of bills. Ginny made a conscious effort to ignore them as she walked into the living room. Leopold paced next to the sliding glass window, begging to go outside. "What do you see out there, Leopold?" she asked. He growled softly from deep in his throat. Ginny looked out the window and saw a squirrel with a spotted tail scamper up the oak tree. Leopold's voice had grown deeper of late. Not meows, but growls, almost deep roars. She no longer expected him to take on normal proportions. His high arched shoulders had become more prominent, his canine teeth more pronounced, and he had grown taller and more muscular. "You want to chase the squirrel, Leopold?" She slid the door open, and Leopold bolted onto the back lawn in just a few short strides. He leapt up against the tree trunk and pawed at the bark, leaving long, deep scratches. She'd had him declawed, but it didn't take. The squirrel got away, but Leopold had gotten much closer than Jenny had expected. Leopold opened his mouth and roared, his white teeth gleaming. He paced around the tree, making a guttural hum, his long tail twitching back and forth, his powerful shoulders moving with the rhythm of his gait. Jenny reached behind her and put her hand on the door handle so that she could get inside quickly if need be. 2 days later, Jenny found the same squirrel dead on the front stoop. She scooped it up with a dustpan and wrapped it securely in a plastic bag, then in another opaque paper bag. She didn't want anyone to know what Leopold had done. Annie came over the next day for lunch. "Something's wrong, Jenny. He shouldn't look like that," said Annie. Leopold started weaving in between Jenny's legs affectionately. She reached down and scratched his head. "He's a pound kitten. A peculiar mix of cat, that's all. Strange looking, but sweet." Annie huffed. "You should take him to the vet, Jenny. He's getting too big. Too thick." "Oh, he's beautiful," said Jenny, picking him up. "Aren't you beautiful, Leopold?" Though Leopold felt too heavy in her arms, he purred, and his rib cage trembled like a lawnmower engine. Something was wrong, Jenny knew, but she wasn't going to take him to the vet so he could see how big Leopold had grown, how his claws had grown back. What if he wanted to take him away? Leopold started bringing more gifts to the front step. Jays, cardinals, and then crows. More squirrels, then raccoons, and once a fox about Leopold's same size. The carcasses were no longer intact, either. Leopold tore hunks of meat from their bellies. Often a bloody trail led down the front step. Jenny dutifully bagged each carcass and placed it deep inside her garbage can, underneath her kitchen trash. Soon, Leopold brought these gifts so frequently that Jenny hardly had room in the can for her regular trash come garbage collection day. "Leopold, you mustn't kill all of these animals," she said to him, but he only purred and rubbed his head against her calf. Annie called frequently, but Jenny put her off. She called one Saturday evening to see if Jenny was going to go to church. "I've got too much to do tomorrow," Jenny said. "Like what?" "Bills, for one thing," Jenny said, looking at the pile on the table.
"Bills?"
"Yes." "By the way, have you taken that cat to the vet yet? Something's not right with him, Jenny," Annie said. "The vet says he's fine," she lied. "Just oversized." In truth, Leopold was much larger than he had been the last time Annie had seen him. Jenny tried to think back on how he had looked when she had picked him out at the pound, if he had ever really looked like a house cat at all. Lately, she had been looking through her old National Geographic magazines, comparing him to the pictures of jungle cats. He bore a strong likeness to a jaguar in a 1978 issue. "Something's wrong with him, Jenny, I'm telling you," said Annie. "I've got to go now, Annie," said Jenny. After that, Jenny stopped answering the phone. She rarely left the house. Leopold supplied all the companionship she needed. He had grown so big that when he slept next to her in the bed, he made it sag just the way Stanley had. His snore sounded similar to Stan's, too. "Leopold, I don't know what I'd do without you," she said to him one night before turning out her bedside lamp. He narrowed his eyes, curled his lips, and licked his long, sharp teeth. He had to be some sort of lion, jaguar, or puma. Whatever he was, she knew city ordinances would not permit his residency. Luckily, the fence around her yard was high enough to keep a secret. Most of Leopold's roaring occurred at night, and could be explained away as squabbling raccoons, if the need arose. People would find that more believable than the true explanation. The more fearful she became of being found out, the more she grew to love Leopold. "I won't let anything happen to you," she told him as he laid his heavy head in her lap. She curled up with him on the couch, letting her ear rest against his muscular belly. She listened to the strong thump of his heart, the heave of his lungs. Every so often the phone rang, or the doorbell, and Ginny ignored it. The sound of either made her straighten up in fear, as if someone was coming for the express purpose of taking Leopold. She hated to do it, but Ginny restricted Leopold's time outdoors. She couldn't risk having him seen. A neighbor might call animal control. Plus, his killings had become problematic. The scrap meat she brought from the store wasn't enough. He started going after dogs. Some strays, but others with collars that Ginny would carefully remove from their dead bodies and hide in a shoebox. Once she caught Leopold laying in the backyard with some poor family's golden retriever ripped open in his forepaws. "Leopold, you bad boy," she said. She walked closer to see if she recognized the dog, but Leopold gave a menacing growl and pulled the carcass closer to his chest. On the kitchen table, the bills piled up, and Ginny had less and less desire to do anything about it. Everything outside the house, outside of her and Leopold, seemed abstract. The phone never rang anymore, and Ginny presumed her friends had given up. Then it occurred to her to pick the phone up and check for a dial tone. Nothing. She flipped through her stack of bills and found several final notice envelopes from the phone company. She threw them in the trash with satisfaction. She didn't want phone service anyway. One morning she woke up and flipped the switch on her bedside lamp. Nothing happened. She flipped the overhead light. Nothing. She quickly realized the electricity was out and thought of her unpaid bills. Leopold, awakened by her switch flipping, raised his head slowly and looked at her from his spot on the bed. "What do we need it for anyway, Leopold?" she asked, and she came back to the bed and hugged him, placing her cheek against his so that she felt his wire-like whiskers. "It's just us now, Leopold," she said. But she hadn't thought it through. Non-payment meant bill collectors. They started coming to the door almost daily, some in company uniforms, others in suits, but each standing on the doorstep with papers, knocking loudly. Ginny peeked out on them from the bedroom window. So did Leopold, and they agreed not to open the door. "Can't they just leave us be, Leopold?" she asked him. No one would come inside where they might see Leopold. Once the brown-haired man in the tie began yelling through the door. "We'll have to foreclose," he said. The next day he yelled, "You have 3 days to remove your things, Mrs. Wells." He spoke in a deep, harsh tone and pounded on the door. Ginny knew to believe his threats. Shutting herself in hadn't proved to be the glorious defiance she'd envisioned, and she wished to undo everything. But at this point, she didn't know how much she owed and to whom. She had thrown out the stack of envelopes. She could try to talk to these men, but that would mean opening the door and risk having them see Leopold. There was no use having a home if Leopold wasn't in it. She could think of only one solution. The men had brought it upon themselves with their hounding. For 3 days she kept Leopold inside. She fed him sparingly, though it pained her to watch him stay hungry. He often stood in front of his feeding bowl, whining. He pawed at the glass window and gave her his sad-eyed look. "I'm sorry, Leopold." "Soon, baby," she said to him. "You'll eat soon. You'll go out soon." Leopold paced through the house nervously. He roared at her. She could see the outline of his ribs through his fur. When the brown-haired man in the tie knocked hard against the door, Jinny opened it. "Come into the living room," she said. As soon as he stepped in, Leopold jumped, hit him in the chest, and knocked him backward. Jinny slammed the door just in time to muffle his screams. She backed away quickly, and before the bill collector could get out another horrific shout, Leopold sliced his throat with his vicious claws. Jinny retreated to her bedroom and let Leopold eat in privacy. She came back to the foyer hours later, once Leopold had eaten his fill. She took the man's wallet from his torn pants and placed it in the shoebox along with the dog collars. Next, she sat down at the table with a glass of water. She looked at the spot where the bills had been and wondered how long it would be until Leopold got hungry again.
And that's our tale for this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please tell your friends about us. Or if you really like us, consider making a small cash donation via the PayPal button at the bottom of our website, welltoldtales.com. Your donations help us to pay our authors. As always, we distribute these files on a Creative Commons license, specifically the Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative 2.5 license. So you can share the files with your friends, you can burn a CD for mom. Just don't change the program and don't try to make a profit from it. Take care.